It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about nanomedicine for the diagnosis of COVID-19 and influenza and what infection sensors mean for the testing marketplace. Call in with a question, your comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Deji Akinwande is an electrical and computer engineering professor at the University of Texas at Austin. Deji, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yes, good morning, Kate. Thank you for inviting us to discuss this technology.
Yes, and together with you, Dimitri Kariv, a UT Austin postdoctoral fellow. Dimitri, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Kate. Happy to be here.
So, Deji, let's start with you. Can you provide us with a visual description of this infection sensor that is in development?
Yes, basically, during the pandemic, it became clear to us that we could contribute technology, especially in terms of diagnostics. So the idea was to make something that was, USB compatible. You could, maybe plug it into your USB power supply, and it would have some sensor devices using nanomaterials, and you would put a drop of either saliva or nasal swab and put a drop on the sensor. And in a few seconds or so, the sensor could tell you whether you have COVID and which particular variant you may have, or whether you have flu, which particular variant, or whether you have none of the above. So a very simple, easy to use, but yet accurate, rapid testing platform.
So the sample that you're working with is saliva in this instance?
Well, in the beginning, we weren't quite sure what the sensitivity of this technology would be. For saliva, you require a much more sensitive sensor. It turns out that our sensor device for detecting COVID is very sensitive. So it can sense from saliva samples. In fact, it could even sense from samples that are liquefied from breath.
Wow, that's amazing. Dimitri, can you explain how this technology works? What is happening on the sensor when the sample is placed on it?
Mm-hmm. Sure. So very briefly, we're using this nanomaterial called graphene, and that's, a wonder material. It's an atomically thin, so it is literally one atom thin. That is, let's say 10,000 times thinner than the human hair. And the wonderful property of that material is that it is electrochemically sensitive to, anything with a charge. And biological molecules such as virus, they have a charge, electrical charge associated with it. So we build up a small biosensor device that consists of, graphene nanomaterial and a few biomolecular functionalization steps to make sure that we can sense a specific virus.
So graphene, you said, is that like the building block of graphite?
That's exactly the case. Yes, it's one of the allotrope or one of the subversion of graphite. So you pretty much can find it in your pencil.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to introduce you here for a moment, talking about the development of a new infection sensor aiming to detect COVID-19 and the flu. At the same time, we have Deji Akinwande and Dimitri Kariv. They're researchers on the project at University of Texas at Austin. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. DJ, where in the developmental stages is this sensor? Where are you at with it?
Yes, Kate, that's a very timely question. So we've now passed what I would say is the proof of concept stage. Proof of concept stage is where we conduct experiments in laboratory facilities here at the University of Texas. So those experiments have been successful. And now we need to go to what I would say is a pilot phase. In the pilot phase, then we need a lot more clinic. We need a variety of clinical samples, do blind testing of different kinds of clinical samples. And that requires much more collaboration with, I would say, medical facilities. So after the pilot phase is when this sort of data can then be presented to the FDA for approval. So I would say the next phase would be this pilot phase.
It makes me wonder, because there are so many tests out there, what that path will be like for full FDA approval, since so many of these tests in COVID era were emergency use authorization. Like, how do you get the full FDA clearance?
Yes, that's a complex question. At the moment, I think most of the sensor technologies are still pursuing this emergency use authorization first, mm-hmm. Especially with the emergence of different variants of this virus, because the full FDA authorization takes much longer time and it has to satisfy much more requirements.
Dimitri, why develop an infection sensor with nanomaterials? Why at this scale?
Well, it's this combination of, you know, the nanomaterial, you know, sensitivity. So, you know, you could make, there are different kinds of sensors in the world, you know, optical, electrical, etc. The point of using nanomaterials specifically here is that, imagine this nanomaterial, you know, as a material, all of its atoms and the whole structure is exposed to your environment. It's like those nanomaterials present by itself, by design, by the way they are made, the kind of nature, the naturally designed sensors, so they can literally sense anything that comes close to it with a charge. And we have shown with our specific work, with this proof of concept work, that our sensors are extremely sensitive, you know, in this case for COVID and flu.
I think it's important to see the distinction here. You're talking about charges, electrical charges, and I wonder why might therapeutics involving electrical charges at the, you know, nanoscale be this promising opposed to using chemistry and chemical processes to make breakthroughs in testing and diagnosis?
Well, it is, I guess, slightly a little bit more complex. It is kind of also chemical here.
Okay.
So this interaction between virus and the nanomaterial is chemical. There is a chemical reaction that happens there, but it is also electrical charge that is associated with that. So it's a complex electrochemical reaction.
I wonder then, Deji, can, you know, what about the costs of creating technology like this and being this sensitive and the materials involved? Is it viable economically to be mass produced?
Yes, that's a very, very relevant question, especially if you want this to be a mass technology. So when it comes to the question of cost, it's usually a matter of scale, scaling up manufacturing facilities to be able to produce this. Fortunately for this material, graphene, this has been undergoing development for the last, almost 20 years now. So there's now facilities in several parts of America where they're making this material at a big scale. And so, in fact, we partner with some of those facilities to get this material. So I'm confident that in terms of cost, with enough scale, you can talk about something that would be less than, you know, would be a few dollars, you know, per sensor. That's approximately the target price that I would imagine this could be produced at scale.
We have UT Austin electrical and computer engineering researchers Deji Akinwande and Dimitri Kariv on the breakthroughs in nanomedicine and this infection sensor development. Call in with your questions along the way. Your comments welcome at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the possibilities with nanomaterials-based sensors that can detect flu, COVID-19, much more quickly than current conventional tests. Join the conversation about nanotherapeutics and the possibilities. Call in with a question, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have UT Austin Electrical and Computer Engineering Professor Deji Akinwande and postdoctoral fellow Dimitri Kariv. They are explaining their efforts on this. Dimitri, can you share how researchers test the infection device? Like, does testing involve working with live viruses?
Oh, that is an excellent question. And shortly at this stage, no. And to really work with a live virus, we would need a very specific biological safety laboratory, level 3, which are only a handful in the country available. So we have been testing instead. There are inactivated virus available, so we've been testing on the inactivated virus eventually. But we've started with pretty much testing validity of our device on these associated proteins. So if you look into the whole virus, it's a huge, you know, biological molecule. But the important part, there are a few specific proteins on its surface that are actually associated with viral intake and kind of the way that this virus attaches to the human host body. And those proteins were distinguished very early in the pandemic by worldwide efforts. And so we are focusing on those proteins mainly.
How does understanding the human body's reaction to viruses, even trace amounts, I mean, how does that further your team's research development?
Well, that is very important. It is very important to stay on top of the research and what's going on and to really understand of how the virus interacts, because we've seen there are also many varieties of the virus, right? So the Omicron and Delta. So, and there are different antibodies that are more specific to certain variants of the virus. And we actually have a follow-up work that is currently ongoing as well to build a biosensor that would actually differentiate not only between COVID and flu, but between different variants of COVID to really say quickly which of the variants is the person exposed to.
There are so many new possibilities that you can imagine there. Deji, you know, what are the ramifications of the confusions of people who think they have influenza, think they have COVID-19? Did you see the confluence of that in the pandemic?
Yes, this ultimately was the motivation for our study, and this work was supported by the National Science Foundation exactly for this reason, because during the pandemic, the consequence of misdiagnosis, could be severe, and in some cases could be fatal, because for the flu, the procedure for treatment and the prognosis was much more positive than, for example, for COVID. So someone that might be suffering from COVID but misdiagnosed as flu, that could have severe consequences. Likewise, someone having flu but then diagnosed for COVID could be subject to more stringent treatment, isolation that they may not have to experience if they were properly diagnosed for flu. So these sort of things have serious consequences, not just for the person's prognosis, but also in terms of their well-being, isolation from their loved ones and society.
Prognosis also really hinging on accuracy and time. On the issue of time, how is this infection sensor, able to make a diagnosis in seconds?
Yes, Kate, it's so wonderful that you asked that question, because the current testing guidelines from the CDC, for example, for COVID, encourages people to wait for a few days so that there is enough material to sense with the conventional PCR test. And that's because the PCR test is not very sensitive. So you need to build up enough of this COVID particles for it to be successful in testing. With our platform, because we are much more sensitive, orders of magnitude more sensitive, this type of biosensor rapid test can be used even at the very outset of symptoms, and there's no need to wait several days, and it still maintains very high accuracy. So that's actually the best time is to diagnose something right at the beginning before it builds strength, so that one could stop the virus from proliferating either within the person or within the community. So we think this will enable so-called preventative testing in individuals and in communities, this type of rapid testing.
Dimitri, what are your insights in the lab on accuracy and rapid testing? The FDA saying all rapid diagnostic tests carry a risk of false positive and false negative results. What are your insights through the infection sensor?
Right, that is a fantastic question. And that's something we've been asking ourselves as well. You know, how can we make our biosensor not only be, you know, quick, fast, that we have shown that our reaction, the reaction time, you know, from dropping a liquid on the sensor to the reaction is within 10 seconds, but how can we make sure that this is, you know, true positive or true negative? And the way we've approached this is to create a small array of, you know, micro sensors on a single device. And each of those sensors, so let's say we'll have four of them, and one will be specific for COVID, one will be specific for flu, and there will be a few of them that are control. So one of them, let's say, will give us, you know, if we see a reaction on, you know, number three, means it's a false positive. On if we see the reaction on device number four, it's a false negative. So by engineering our device from kind of having a single reaction sensor, we build up, we engineer a little bit more complex solution. It's not that much more complex to make it. It's just, but we need to build it up specifically to make sure that we can correctly, truly differentiate with control between false positives and false negatives.
Talking about the development of a new infection sensor and the work underway at UT Austin detecting COVID-19 and the flu simultaneously, Deji Akinwande is here. Dimitri Kadiv, researchers on the project, join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions. Deji, I want to circle back to graphene, and, you know, it's been considered a disruptive technology, and I'm just wondering, what is its potential in biomedicine, in therapeutics, and what you're doing in the future as you further this virus research and testing?
Yes, graphene is one of this, say, unusual materials that transcend many applications and many industries. It's kind of the equivalent of, let's say, steel. It can be used very broadly from electronics to biomedicine. So we've also done some work. You can use graphene, for example, as a pacemaker inside the body. That's some of our recent work. Others have shown that you can also place it on the skin to measure vital signs such as blood pressure. That's also among our recent work. And so this material basically almost is limitless in its potential because it can sense charge, it can respond to pressure, it can respond to light, it is very sensitive for chemical reactions, it can be used for mechanical applications, it's biocompatible, so you can place it inside the body, you can create holes in it so that you can do DNA sequencing. So it's really limited by the imagination, to be quite frank.
That must be really exciting to you as a researcher and seeing so many possibilities.
Indeed, indeed. And so this material has continued to experience growth In terms of the number of patents that are filed every year for innovation across many, many industries.
Thank you both for joining us.
Yes, it's been a pleasure, Kate.
Thank you for inviting.
Deji Akinwande is an electrical and computer engineering professor at University of Texas at Austin. Dimitri Karif is a UT Austin postdoctoral fellow. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.